come free. That ball is gonna drop. I'm not sure what I'm gonna be, but I know what I'm not. Feeling my fair share of pain, trying not to suffer. Only time will set me free. Feeling stronger, getting tougher. Old maid's knocking, but you can't come in. I'm washing away my sins. Old maid's knocking, but you can't come in. No, she can't come in. I'm nobody's victim. Living a life well played. Taking care of business. I'm already paid. No nurse with a purse waiting to be saved. I'm nobody's victim. Living a life. Pearly gates, crawling to the finish line, looking to just disintegrate. Can't be wasting precious time. Old maid's knocking, but you can't come in. I'm washing away my sins. Old maid's knocking, but you can't come in. She can't come in. Living a life well played. Ah, that old maid's knocking, but she can't come in. I'm washing away my sins. Old maid's knocking, but you can't come in. No, she can't come in, 'cause I'm nobody's victim. Living a life well played, taking care of business. I'm already paid. I'm no nurse with a purse, just waiting to be saved. I'm nobody's victim.
That was Cheryl Lescom with Nobody's Victim. Cheryl just happens to be my very special guest this week. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ. I'm so excited for our guest this week. I first saw her sing back in the early 80s, where she was blowing the roof off the bars in Grand Bend. She's been a fixture on the Canadian music scene for over 45 years. She sang backup for Ronnie Hawkins, toured with Long John Baldry, Jeff Healey, Matt Minglewood, Dutch Mason, the Downchild Blues Band, Jack DeKaiser, Dale Shannon, David Wilcox, Mel Brown, Paul James, Billy Durst, and the Detroit Women. Long John Baldry said she had the biggest and best voice in Canada. She was the 2006 winner of the Mel Brown Award. Her latest album with the Tucson Choir Boys is called Well Played, released October 2020. My guest this week, Cheryl Lescom. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. How are you, Stuart?
I'm doing well. It's so great to have you here. Been looking forward to chatting with you. I know we've all been locked down for quite a while, so it's nice to actually see your smiling face again. And let's just pick up where we left off. We were just chatting before the show about some of the roots and where it all started for you. So when did you actually start?
I started in 1975. Like, I was singing in doing all sorts of, you know, talent contests and stuff, because you used to be able to go to a bar and get up with bands and stuff. And so that started, you know, the early 70s, like 72, 73. But I was working in cosmetics, and, you know, it was good. Life was okay. But there was something really missing. And I, you know, always sung. I always kind of, you know, you couldn't shut me up sort of thing. And then when I started working at the Coronet in 73 or 74, anyway, I got super introduced to music, and I got super introduced to musicians. And that's when I decided that I met Nancy Wilson, a harp player at the Coronet. And after her gig, we got together, and I said, you know, I just really want to sing. I want to do what you're doing. And she said, well, then do it. You know, put down your tray, take some singing lessons, stop smoking cigarettes, and get off your ass and do it.
Nice.
So, okay, well, that sounds like a really good plan. So I did. I'm not going to tell you that story. But anyway, I got enough money to get my first practice hall together. And I took some opera lessons from Ed Johnson, and got myself a band and got myself together. So that was, I started singing backups for Mike Lehman, and he was with a band called Yukon for years. And yeah, he had Mike Lehman in the Full Flight. So that was like around early 75. And so I was singing full time by myself in my own band by the beginning of 1976.
Good. Right back to the beginning. Where were you born?
Kitchener.
Right.
Kitchener, Waterloo Hospital, KW Hospital. My mom was a nurse there, and my kids were born there. I was born there. My mother was graduated from nursing there and worked there. I'm a Kitchener girl through and through, that's for sure.
Born and raised.
All
right.
I've lived all over Canada, but I'm back here, and this is probably where I'll stay for a while, that's for sure.
Nice. And so what was childhood like for you in Kitchener?
Not very good.
No.
I have to say, I was loved by my mother, but my father left when I was a kid, and I was an only child. And back in the 50s, that was having a single mother and an only child was kind of a common issue you didn't see very often. And, you know, she worked all the time. She was a nurse, so I got shuffled around a lot. And, I did not like being a child. I hated school. I did it all. I'm loving my life right now, but I really didn't like being a child at all.
Wow, that's crazy. What school did you actually go to?
Well, we moved a lot. So, I mean, you know, McGregor School, Northdale School, Sunnyside School. God, there's a couple in there. I can't even remember. I quit school as soon as I could. I quit school and I quit school before I turned 16. I turned 16 in the summer of 69. I didn't go back to school in September. So I had zero education. But all my education took place with people and for people and by people.
And that's when it all started. Well, and that's a great year, 1969, to sort of quit school and start discovering yourself and discovering the world and getting into music.
Well, it was just such a pivotal time for music, and the scene was really happening. And I mean, young people were a big part. You could, you know, we had some, you felt a little power there because there were so many of us. I wouldn't trade that for the world. I look at my kid's situation now with this, you know, the internet and all this fake news and all this. So thankful I was raised when I was.
I agree. Oh, that's fantastic. That must have been some seriously exciting times. So what kind of festivals were going on then? What kind of concerts? I mean, obviously, it's the summer of Woodstock, and it was...
Yes. Yeah, I was on my way to Woodstock, but I met a guy, so I never made it. But, the Toronto Pop Festival in 1969 was the first one that I really went to, which was, I think, June 20th, 21st, 22nd of 1969. And so that was 3 days of ridiculously good music. I mean, it was just awesome. Yeah. And then that summer of 69, I saw like a ton of bands, because we would go to the Rock Pile in Toronto all the time and go to Rochdale and do all those nasty things that we were supposed to be doing at those ages. And then there was the September Pop Festival in Rochdale Stadium, Toronto again. And that was a huge festival. We went to Montreal. Music was everything. We hitchhiked all over the place just to see music. So I would have made it to. I'm kind of glad that I didn't, though, because I think it would have been a little bit of a shit show. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm jealous. So, I mean, those are the times. I mean, Festival Express and the Toronto Pop Festival and Rock and all those.
I saw Joplin. I mean, everything. I saw, you know, John Lennon and Yoko Ono when they recorded "Give Peace a Chance." Was in September in 1969 at the Toronto Festival. I mean, the shows. I saw Zeppelin in 1969 in January of 1969 before they started their tour, their North American tour. It was in Detroit at the Grandy Ballroom, and MC5 opened up, and I was like this young little girl, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing, because that man, I mean, he moved me in a big way. And he just, you know, Robert Plant, just vocally, physically, sexually, everything. He was like everything, and I was just mesmerized. And we went down to the Grandy Ballroom all the time in Detroit to see bands. So, you know, the music was incredible just at that time in my life. And it wasn't just because I was so young and everything was so new, and you know, your experience is always so beautiful when you're so young and everything, the world opens up to you. But it wasn't just that. It was now, especially at my age, I get to look back, and I know that was a really, really special time in music and for young people.
Absolutely. That's incredible. I mean, I went to Woodstock 25 years after the fact. I went to Woodstock 94, and it was a shit show. It was a mess, but certainly not like the original. I mean, we went to the original site at Bethel and all those kind of things, and there's some tributes going on, but I mean, it's just not
the same. You can't repeat stuff like that. No, you can't repeat magic. You know, you just can't repeat magic. Sometimes things just happen, and it's the moment, and it's just the way it's supposed to be.
You feed him and you love him. You guide him down the road. Pray that he's listening to all that he's been told. So love me. Lessons learned on such a short, fast run. Deaf ears and blind luck, they won't take you far. But I'll be there to love you for all that you are. It's just for a moment. I'm just an instant in time. You're gonna look for another, and I hope that she lets you shine. Keep me just.
Man, you can sure hear the Janis Joplin influence in that. That was Shine by Cheryl Lescombe.
So do you think, you know, bypassing the ugly childhood, but do you think a lot of that had something to do with your career in music and sort of inspired who you became once you got out of the house and once you got free and away from all that?
Well, my father, he was a musician, and he could play every instrument by ear, and he sang like Nat King Cole. But he left when I was a little kid, and then he came back when I was, you know, 7 for a minute, and then he left, and then he came back when I was 15 for a minute, and then he left. But whenever he came back, through his drunken barbaricness, I could see that, like, he, like, when he was sober and he got on that piano and played, like, you just were moved to tears. So, I mean, that was, and my mother's a Bingaman, you know, Sean's, her mother was a Bingaman. So there's, Binghamans have a fair amount of talent in that side of their family too. So I think that, you know, I think there was something in me that definitely was a natural, because I do think that God gives you certain sort of natural things and you can do whatever you want. But I have a very rough voice and have ever since I was a kid. My friends used to call me the boy talking girl. So that kind of put me into a different category as far as knowing what I was going to sing. So right. When I heard singers like Dusty Springfield and people like that, who have that big ballsy sort of voice, it was great to be able to, because I knew I was no Diana Ross, like that wasn't going to happen. So, you know, things opened up when I started to hear people like Janis and Dusty and, you know, Etta. Aretha. I mean, I know Aretha Franklin, but she's got that power. You know, I've got power. I don't have a range, but you know, and I think also because of my upbringing, I can do pain. I can do pain really well. And when I sing a song that means something to me, that pain comes back, and it's like therapy. I really do believe it. Music saved my life. There's no doubt about it.
I feel the same way. I mean, and it's incredible. You do hear that in your voice, that power and that emotion. And I think that was, you know, that voice is certainly the perfect delivery system for everything that you'd experienced when you were younger. And that's, you know,
yeah.
Thank God that you have that voice.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks for saying that, Stuart. Because some people, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I don't pretend to be, but I still feel really, very grateful to be, you know, be able to have done what I'm been doing for so long. And even with the little bit of hiatus that we've gone through now, there's still some juice left in me there, Stuart.
Yeah, I believe it. Well, I witnessed that firsthand last year when we did a session together, and thank you, by the way.
Thank you
for a couple of songs that you sang on my album, which were just fantastic and just the highlight of the album for me. I mean, I'd been going out to see you since, I'm not sure when you started playing the down in Grand Bend in the summers, but I had caught you there. And I would imagine it would have been early 80s. And we used to go out there pretty regularly and catch you there. And then of course, all the clubs here around town and anytime we get to get a chance to see
you. Good time.
Yeah.
Time
goes by.
Super hopping. I mean, we used to play Grand Bend. I started playing Grand Bend, geez, like 77. And it was Kelly's Boogie Parlor back then. And it was just friggin' rocking. It was just the best time. And I was playing with a band called Hardtail back then. And they were a Kitchener band. And actually, Al Hozak, who's the bass player in that band, is now with a band called Fog. And Steve Emsley was a guitar player, and Bill Cooper was a drummer. And we had played this Kelly's Boogie Parlor, and Bill was screwing around and fell off a balcony and freaking broke his back. So we had to cancel. Like, it's just the stories, Stuart, when I start thinking about them, because, you know, people say, well, what about this? I can't remember anything. But then when you start spinning the memory box, that's when things start
going to come. Well, that reminded me, you triggered a memory of mine when we'd always stay at the Colonial Hotel at the top of the strip there.
Yeah.
And we had a similar experience where a bunch of us were sharing one room and trying to sneak into the room one night, and the owner came out, suddenly popped up in the window, and one of my buddies went flying backwards and landed back first on the air conditioning unit on the ground. Didn't do any serious damage, didn't break his back. We thought at the time maybe he had, but we had literally had to sort of sling him over our shoulders and run. It was just craziness back then. But yeah, I mean, things
I wonder, how did we make it alive, Stuart?
I know. Well, I mean, unfortunately, a few of our friends, I know a few of my friends that didn't, and I'm sure you find the same thing. We all did, but
I hear you. For sure. We're lucky ones.
But very lucky, and scares the crap out of me that, you know, I have a son that's going to be a teenager soon and soon be out in the world experiencing a lot of the same things that we did. But hopefully he has more sense than I did. But
does he have a passion?
He does. I mean, he does have the music thing, but he's, you know, like a lot of kids today, he's more into the video games. And although he's the one that got me on TikTok, and, you know, he's the one that's been doing my TikTok videos for me too. So he's got some pretty good insights and pretty good awareness on how that whole social media thing works.
So maybe something like videography or something like that. I mean, I think as parents, it's our duty to find our child's passion, whatever it is, you know, whether it's woodworking or working on an automobile or music or painting or journalism or anything. And, you know, as long as we do that and just, you know, I think that they're going to be okay. It's just, I mean, I kept my boys both so exhausted with sports, they couldn't do anything else. And 19, man, they are busy in the brain and every other part of their body. So they have to be exhausted. So, I mean, you know, anyway, just throwing it out there.
Yeah. All right. So back to you and back to the music. And boy, we've been all over the place. I'm not sure where we left off. But I mean, so when, I mean, you talked about a little bit earlier of meeting Nancy Wilson and when Hart played at the Cornet and her telling you to, you know, get serious and put down the tray and get at it. But prior to that, I mean, had you been singing your whole life? Had you been into music as a child?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my mom, like, you know, the radio was on constantly. And so music was something that I would retreat to my room and just put on the radio and rock back and forth for hours with music. So music was my, you know, something that I did by myself. And I really enjoyed it right from the time I was a kid, a baby. My mom said I was rocking in my crib to music when I was a baby. So, you know, through school, I was always in the choirs, and through, you know, church, I was always in the church choirs. And, you know, that was, you know, what you kind of did back then. As far as music, there wasn't an awful lot, especially for young people. There wasn't any, you know, I took piano lessons and stuff, but then, you know, then the mid 60s happened, and the girl groups, and, you know, a lot of stuff, like, you know, by 63, things were starting to really open up, and I was 10 at that time. So that's really a pivotal time for music, especially, you know, because there was nothing on TV. We didn't even have TV. So, you know, you had to kind of really rely on music to give you, to, you know, everything between books and music. And I was not a book reader. So the radio was it. And then, you know, radio was the only thing back then. I mean, we didn't have a hi-fi and we could never afford records or anything like that. So it was a big part of my life. I can pinpoint summers, like, you know, oh, that song came out in like the summer of 57. And I mean, I was only a little kid, but I can still remember certain songs from certain times more than I can probably remember my friends from certain times.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same way. There's certain songs that bring me right back to a year, to a summer, you know, to a place in time or somebody I was hanging out with. Absolutely. Now, what was the first, was there a first song that really grabbed you?
Well, I think like the Beatles, you know, of course, like that Ed Sullivan Show was a mind blower. But before that, I mean, the girl group started coming out. So my cousin was a couple years older than me, and she had a record player and she had records. So I would go over to her house and she would play me all the girl, the Ronettes, the Supremes, a lot of the stuff from the early 60s. So I think that, you know, the first song that really struck me was, you know, like the Do Run Run song, or, you know, one of the girl group songs, And Then He Kissed Me, or, you know, one of those songs that's with all those thick harmonies and those beautiful vocals. I could listen to that stuff. And still to this day, I never get sick of that stuff. Ever.
Yeah, me too. It's great. It's absolutely timeless. So do you have a favorite singer?
I have.
Probably.
For me, it was, you know, Dusty Springfield and Etta James and Aretha Franklin and Janis Joplin. You know, I liked the ballsier. I wasn't into Olivia Newton-John, and, you know,
right.
But I really did like the girl, because I mean, even Ryan, what I'm losing my mind here, from the Do Run Run song,
Ronnie Spector.
Ronnie Spector. I mean, she had a powerful voice too. You know, so those vocals are my favorite. I really like a big voice.
Right. So, and what was the first time that you sang in public, aside from the choirs and schools? What was the first time you got out as a band or a solo performer? Like it was an open mic or jam night or?
Yeah, jam nights were big. I used to go to all the jam nights and the talent contests. And but when I was working at the Coronet, I got up on stage with Del Shannon and a couple of people that, you know, just because they, you know, said, hey, because I'd be walking around on serving all my customers, singing every song to this. So it got to the point where they, you know, I got invited up on stage a few times. But I think that's when Ann told me that, I just thought, you know, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So they had wet t-shirt contests down at the Coronet at the time. So I won and I got some money. I got myself started.
Sworn you thought of me the most, and I could have sworn I was more than your shadow. But I'm fading. Time, master, where has all my sand gone? Was it you me down all along? Gleaming treasures didn't light my way. Can I stay? 'Cause time is a fickle prince. Time is as honest as it gets. Of me the most.
And I could have sworn I was more than your shadow. I'm fading, said I'm fading.
Oh, I just love that one. That was Cheryl Lescom with Coldest Lover.
And where did you go from there?
Oh, everywhere. That's when you know, I got booked. I got a manager, and Dram started handling me. And Dram handled everybody, all like major people, all the Kitchener bands. Dram handled. They were very big in Southwestern Ontario, and they. So I started going on the road, and you know, had several different bands by the time the 80s came around. And then, you know, getting to work with Long John Baldry was a real thrill, because I was madly in love with that It Ain't Easy album. Like, that was one of my favorite albums of all time. And when he came to the Coronet, and I wasn't working at the Coronet at that time, we were opening up for him. My band was opening up for him. And Kathy had gone to jail, his backup singer. And Kathy McDonald, and I said, can I get up on and sing Black Girl with you? And he said, yeah. So I did, and he hired me, and then I got to go on the road with him for a year, and that was like a thrill. A thrill is a thrill, and it was a thrill with Long John Baldry. I had worked with Ronnie Hawkins prior to that, and that wasn't so much of a thrill, because I didn't really make it to the road with him. Other things happened.
Gotcha. Well, it must have been a hell of an education with Long John Baldry. I mean, and the influence that he had, you know, back in England and back in the early days before coming over here, is just incredible. It's legendary.
Oh, and his telephone book, like, it was unbelievable. He had private numbers for everybody. It was and he was just such a gentleman. He was really a scholar when it came to music too, but he was so, you know, he was very, very gracious to me. And you know, because he was a gentleman, you never had to worry about him being an asshole.
Right. That's a rare thing, I guess.
Probably. Unlike the other person talking.
Gotcha. Say no more. Well, and I think he has a bit of a reputation.
Well, do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I guess, and probably more of a boys club, I guess, with him. But I mean, probably quite an education for the musicians who did get to work for him. But yeah, I can imagine for yourself that you're better off with somebody like Long John Baldry. So, and then after that year on the road, then, you know, did that inspire, were you doing other work in other bands and backup, or what finally inspired you to say, I can go solo?
No, not when I was working with him, because it was a cross Canada tour. So, but then I got to, then, you know, I've had so many different bands. I can't even remember them all, but then, you know, I got finished with him. He moved out west and, started doing a lot of jingles, and, you know, kind of changed everything for himself. And so when that happened, I just started working again on, and, you know, had my bands and started writing a little bit more. And, you know, just been on the road. Like, it's just a kind of a road warrior for a lot of years. But, you know, around 1985, 84, I met my husband, and I wanted kids. I wanted to get married. I wanted all those things. So, I knew that there was choices to be made, and the choice for me was to put, you know, having children and having a life other than music first.
All right. So 80s come along, you get married, you start a family. I mean, were you still singing and playing, or did that just all completely
go away? Always. But you know, we always did, like, we did Halifax a lot and, you know, stuff like that. But in 1990, I had my first son. And I had a few miscarriages prior to that. And, you know, singing is not, especially because, you know, I was into my late 30s at that time. And, you know, singing is pressure on the diaphragm, and it's pressure on that part of your body. And so I had to take a little bit of time off, but, you know, not more than a year. And I got pregnant and had my child. And then it was a kind of a crazy time for a while, but I still played, but I had my mother living with me, and she got cancer, and then I got pregnant again. And then we moved back out east. So for 5 years, it was a real chaotic time. So I didn't do a lot of music other than just, you know, local stuff or stuff that I could do easily.
Right. Well, actually, it's interesting that you brought that up with the singing and the effect it has. There's that legendary story of the singer, and her name's escaping me at the moment, that sang on Gimme Shelter with the Rolling Stones, and she was pregnant at the time and apparently miscarried after doing that session, and she blames it on that session.
No, for sure. It's down there, you know, when yeah. And especially, you know, as you get up, what was her name? Mary.
I was going to say Mary Shelley, but I don't think it's Mary. Anyways,
she was awesome. Anyway,
I just quickly Google that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she just, she was in a horrendous car accident and lost her legs or something stupid like that. And has just made another album. Just recently, in the last like 6 months, I just saw her on CBS Good Morning, and it was quite a story, boy. Quite a story.
Yeah, I was just reading a similar story, I think, a few months ago on it. I mean, because her name comes up a lot, and there was somebody,
Mary Clayton,
that's what it was. Yeah, thank you. And I mean, there was somebody had isolated the vocal track on that recording years ago, and that started becoming sort of a viral thing. And just hearing her singing it a cappella was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But even the breaks and, I mean, the cracks and the voice and things like that, which always kind of get buried in the mix. But, I mean, I think that's what made it real and made it authentic. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that crystalline voice that you're talking about, like with Diana Ross or somebody like that. But there is just that realness and that rawness and that power that is unmatched.
A lot of feel. And you can't get that without having a couple of cracks. But you know what? She never sang a bad note.
No.
Like, you know, there's just you can have some cracks and some crevices and all that stuff, but if you're flat and pitchy, that's one thing. And she was not flat or pitchy, not even one iota on that whole track, because I heard the same thing and it was just awesome.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I mean, it's great to, hopefully there's people besides yourself that are gonna kind of keep that tradition alive. I mean, I know there's some good R&B singers coming up, and there's always people around and indie artists, but it just seems like it's sort of going a little bit by the wayside. And I mean, that's why I said it was a real joy having you in the studio last year and hearing the real deal. So kind of going back to where everything started, it doesn't sound like there was really any other alternative for you. You know, education was not going to happen.
Nope.
There was really no plan B. It was just, you were all in.
I was all in. And I was all in. But you could be back then. I mean, you could work 6 days a week and do a matinee on Saturday. I made more money in 1976 than I've ever made in my life. I mean, you know, in the 80s, I was doing a lot of jingles and stuff. And I mean, you could make money back then. You can't, it is tough these days. I mean, with all the streaming shit and, you know, live performances going by the wayside and, you know, CDs, people not wanting the physical anymore. And it's just, I feel real bad for these kids that have to have music, because, you know, I didn't pick music. Music picked me. But I was lucky enough to be in an area where, you know, there was tons of work, and it's just not like that anymore. It's just, I look at these young people and I'm just, my heart goes out to them.
Yeah. It's really tough. I mean, and they've got to do everything. And I mean, you see people that have thousands of followers and thousands of streams, and they're not making a penny.
I know, you look at people like Samantha Martin, and she's freaking awesome. And she's young, and she's trying to do it all herself. And, you know, she's puts together shows, she puts together videos, she, you know, puts together her own music. And it just makes me crazy.
No, I don't recall. I don't think I've seen you on any of these virtual shows in the last year and a half. Have you made any effort to sort of get into the virtual world, or are you just waiting for live music to come back?
Yeah, I didn't sign up for that shit. And I did. I've got my new CD, and I did a video for you know, Wise Old Owl. I think you saw that somewhere along the line.
Right. Yeah.
But so I did a video and I put that out. But I can't stand that. I can't stand. I think it's, I mean, God bless anybody that wants to, but I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
I've had, you know what, having it and losing it's worse than never having it at all.
I bet it is. Now, I was talking to James Anthony last week, and he's going to be on one of the upcoming shows, and he was saying suddenly he just got a bunch of calls within a day or two, things opening up and potential shows and bookings. Do you have anything booked for the summer?
Yep. I mean, there's things, there's tentatives, but, you know, people are just waiting to see if things can open up a little bit more. So, you know, there's, I know that next year is going to be one of the busiest years of my life. I have that feeling. I think that, you know, between festivals coming back, between a lot of stuff that was postponed. I mean, a lot of festivals like last year, I had, it's not coming back like it was supposed to. I've got the Southside Shuffle the second week in September, and that's on a Saturday. And then I've got the King Cardin Blues Festival on the Friday. So that's like the to the 10th and 11th of September. So hopefully things are going to open up by that time. But, you know, it's hard to, it's really hard. But one thing about these places, it's not like the musicians are working. So it's, if they do decide to open up, things are going to open up quick. You know, things will bounce back pretty quick, I think.
Right. So tell me a bit about the new album. Now, are you a songwriter yourself? And I can't remember from, I'm always one of those nerds that kind of looks at, I used to take the albums home and look at who produced it and the songwriting credits. But as you said, these days, we don't have that tangible item now, but even on Spotify and things, I'm always trying to go to the artists and the credits and see who actually wrote the songs, and hadn't had a chance to sort of peek through the new record. But so you have been writing songs. When did that start?
Oh, I think I wrote my first song when I was about 7. You know, when I had a piano and I wrote the first song I wrote was called Blind Girl. So, oh God. Anyway, I wrote, like, you know, just kind of as for fun. And then when I started playing music, you know, I did blues and then I did covers and started writing. Like, I did some writing in the 70s and did some writing in the 80s, but I didn't really do my first album or CD until 95. And I'd done a lot of background vocals and stuff on other people's music, but I hadn't really done anything myself. So 95, I put out my first CD. And that was called All the Way. And since then, I've got, this is my 6th CD, so.
Fantastic. All right, so tell us what we can expect from the new ones for those who are maybe just discovering Cheryl Lescom for the first time. And hopefully we are introducing you to some new audiences as well.
Well, this is an album that's, you know, it's about getting older, the whole album. It's called Well Played. And the whole album is just about getting older, you know, right from this, you know, Nobody's Victim from the first song to, you know, Wise Old Owl and stuff. It's just a reflection back on some things. There's some, you know, kind of got an attitude about things in some songs, which, you know, is what I do. So
it's good to have an attitude at this
release. It's a release.
And it's not a solo record. This is with the Choir Boys again.
The Tucson Choir Boys. And yeah. Ray Walsh is my writing partner. He's one of the guitar players in Tucson Choir Boys. So we get together and I've done 3 albums with them. And I love those guys. They put the magic in the music.
So how did that relationship come about?
The first album I did was in Halifax, where I lived out there in 95. And then when I came back here, I did High Heel Blues. And that Dan Graham had introduced me to Ray Walsh because he was doing the bass tracks on my CD, and I had never really met him. I was just using session players. I wasn't using my band at that point. So I met him then, and he was with a band. I forget what they were called. But anyway, we just kind of got together, and the Tucson Choir Boys formed out of that. I think they might have even been around before. The Tucson Choir Boys might have been around before they started playing with me, so I'm not quite sure. But that was all around right after I had cancer in 2003, so this would have been 2004.
And I remember hearing about the cancer, and that was, you know, thank God that you survived that and battled through. So what kind of lasting impact did that have, or did that have some effect on the music? I mean, obviously you said that the new album's songs about getting older, so I mean, everything that you've experienced over the years is probably washed into these songs, but that particular time in your life, what impact did that have for you?
Well, my kids were young. I mean, I was, you know, just turned 50, and, you know, my kids were young, like one was 10 and one was 7. And, I, you know, my husband had left me and I was by myself, and, it was a tough time. My mother died. it was a really tough time, and it shaped me as far as, you know, just another thing that doesn't make you, doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. And it did that, and gave me a whole new appreciation for what life is all about. You know, just, you know, I'm almost 20 years clean now, and I just, you don't know how much that means to me. I mean, every day is a gift for real. Like when you've had a sentence like that, and I was given like a 50-50 chance to make it 5 years. So when you have a sentence like that, you change. And I definitely did. I became a gentler person for sure. Gentler on myself and gentler on everybody else too.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, and I mean, certainly with everything that you described that year, there's enough fodder there to certainly put together several blues albums. And I mean, legitimately, you come by that, honestly, I guess.
Honestly, yeah, I really have. There's no faking it going on there.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. So what can we expect then? I mean, so the album's out, there hopefully is some shows, you know, is there just keep doing what you're doing and just keep playing and singing and recording as long as you can?
I'm hoping to. I mean, I'd like to go out on a high note. I don't know what that high note's going to be. I don't want to be 80, you know, pounding the pavement, but on the same hand, like I'm, you know, a couple of years away from being 70, and I can't see myself quitting right at this point. As long as I have a voice and as long as I'm singing with the power and the passion and the energy that I need to be, then I want to keep doing it. The second that it becomes too much of a chore, the second that I don't have the energy or I'm not putting on a show or I'm not relating to my audience the way I need to, I'll quit. I'm kind of at the point where I don't want to take smaller gigs anymore, because I really, when things open up, the kids are going to need those gigs. Those kids out there that are just starting, that need to, you know, hone their skills and get in front of a live audience and play in a band and meet other musicians and bars. We need them to open up, because that's the only place that they can work on their passion. And so I, you know, really hoping that when things open up, that, you know, musicians aren't undercutting each other, that if you're going to play for $75, don't just go home and you know, let the kids play for 75. Let somebody else that's working their way up the way you did, let them play for me. But if you're, you know, got a good job and you're just out there playing, that it's going to undercut the salaries of all these hardworking full-time musicians that have not been able to play for the last 18 months. And once that precedence gets set, it's going to be really, really hard to get it back up again.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and you've seen that progressively over the years.
Over again. It just be nuts.
Whether it's just, hey, you can pass the hat around or play for tips or just play for the door, to being, you know, hey, here's a venue to play. And I mean, it used to be so many venues everywhere and everybody paid well and everybody supported live music. And it's just getting tougher and tougher. And I haven't even really kept up with what's officially closed.
You can't, you know, hopefully Sean and Marcel will get another place, because they're really, really good at what they do. It's just so freaking small, you can't put anybody in it. Right. So it's, you know, I'm really hoping that things open up a little bit all the way around. You know, maybe our stupid government will start supporting live music and supporting venues, like giving them tax breaks. If you have live music in your venue, whether it be a restaurant or a bar, you should have a tax write-off because you're supporting the arts. And that's the only way that we're going to be able to, these poor bar owners are getting taxed up the yin yang between their insurance costs and just being able to run something in Ontario. It's like, you know, it's impossible. So something's got to give. And you know who's going to get screwed over just like they always do is the musician. So, you know, I'm trying not to be too down, but you know, honest to God, if I were, I get hurt for these young kids. Yeah. I
think that's the thing. I mean, so many people were able to work from home, and so many other types of businesses were able to flourish, you know, deliveries places like Amazon and things like that. But the restaurants and the musicians probably really got hurt more than anybody else.
More than anybody. You know, and my son's an actor. Same thing. I mean, it's just, you know, his career was, you know, just starting, and, you know, So, anybody that's in live theater too, the same situation. Movies have been being made for the last few months, so things are opening up there again. But, the restaurant business, they've been able to do takeout, but it's the bar business has not been able to do anything. The travel business hasn't been able to do anything. Musicians haven't been able to do anything. Live musicians haven't been able to do anything. So hopefully going to open up a bit for security companies and catering companies and all the things that surround themselves with live music and live venues or live sports even. Same thing. I mean, it's just things have got to open up a little bit. I'm seeing too much of the negative mental aspects of these lockdowns. And we're vaccinating like a good rate of too many of these anti-vaxxers out there.
Oh, I know. It's just
unbelievable. It makes me crazy.
And they want it both ways. I mean, they complain about their freedoms and the lockdowns, and they want everything back to normal, but they won't get vaccinated so we can get things back to normal.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's, well, I've had my first shot and we're registering. We can pre-register today, I think, for our second shot now. So
yeah, I pre-registered last week for
Kitchener's in a hot spot. So
it is this new Delta variant. I think that we need to open up, and if these people don't want to get vaccinated, I worry that that herd immunity is not going to happen, and the variants are going to get stronger because there's not enough people are getting vaccinated. But on the other hand, we got to open things up.
We could do a whole show on that. All right. Well, so I guess finally back to the music, and I mean, we could probably just talk for hours. I love hearing some of those old stories, and I think I've kind of lost my train of thought as we got sort of derailed there, but I can feel your passion, and I'm hoping that we're going to see you playing live. So, all right. So Cheryl, it's been great chatting with you. I really appreciate it. It's been a blast. This hour has just sailed by, and we'd like to wrap up the show with the 10 questions from the famous French interviewer Bernard Pivot. And these 10 questions are made famous by James Lipton on the Actors Studio. And I always like to get back to this at the end of the show. So what is your favorite word?
Yes.
What is your least favorite word?
COVID.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
My children and my music.
Nice. And what turns you off?
Trump.
I'm almost thinking for the last bunch of interviews I did, and we've gotten sidetracked. I mean, I really need to do a talk show that's just about today's issues. And what is your favorite curse word? And I've heard a few during the interview. We may have to edit some of those.
You know what it is. It's the one that I've used most often in this interview. Ends with a K.
Yeah. What sound or noise do you love?
Birds singing, waves crashing.
Beautiful. Yeah, we have the birds singing every morning here. You know, we lived in Nanaimo, BC for about a year and a half, and we had a house right on the ocean, and we would have the waves lull us to sleep at night and wake us up in the morning like an alarm clock. And I don't know why I ever left and came back, but
beautiful, beautiful part of the world. Yeah, no, I hear you.
God's country. All right. Yeah. So you've been doing music your whole life and didn't seem like there was a plan B or any other alternative, but what other profession than yours would you like to attempt?
Well, nothing at this point in my life, because I'm not going to do anything except music for this point in my life. But when I was younger, I was in cosmetics. I really liked cosmetics. I think maybe I would have done something in real estate or, advertising or something like that. That would have, interested me. Sales, I've always really liked, being around people. I'm a people person for sure.
Well, I'm happy that we're just going to hear more music. What profession would you not like to do?
Being a garbage man.
That's a popular one.
It is. Just the smell of it makes you die.
Yeah, no, nothing but respect.
Right.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Your mom is waiting for you. Now you're going to make me cry.
Yeah, we always have to end on an emotional note. Well, I bet she is, and hopefully my mom is waiting for me as well. But hopefully we won't get there for a long, long time, and hopefully we'll hear a lot more music from you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you play live. I will definitely be listening to this new record and playing it as much as we can and sharing it as much as we can. And I've got some more songs once we get back to the studio, I'd love to get you in to sing as well. So
absolutely. Thank you, Stuart. It's been a pleasure.
I sure hope you enjoyed that interview with Cheryl Lescom as much as I did, and the music as well. Hopefully at some point in the not too distant future I'll be able to release the full unedited version, but as this is a morning show, we had to go with the version that you hear. So Cheryl had a lot to say, and she still has a lot to say musically as well, and it's great to have her on the show. We look forward to many, many more years of Cheryl and her music. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Stuart McKee, and this has been Musicians FAQ.
Love yourself before you love anybody else. Figure out just what it is that you're all about. When you make your mark, you're never leaving room for any doubt. And so you find another who you just can't.